This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. It has been a year since the Philippines' new president, Rodrigo Duterte, took office. And over the course of that year, it is reported Mr. Duterte has been responsible for the extrajudicial killings of 7,000 people in the name of the war on drugs. There is almost no modern-day comparison to a democratically elected leader who has been so openly responsible for so much bloodshed. And yet, Duterte has received praise from the likes of Donald Trump, and as he begins the second year of his tenure, he enjoys a whopping 75% to 80% approval rating among Filipinos. Joining me to help understand what's happening in the Philippines with the guise of the drug war is San Ho Tree. He's a fellow of the Drug Policy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Welcome to the program, San Ho.
Thanks for having me.
So first, what was the situation that Duterte came into by which he was able to promise this severe crackdown and become elected? How severe was the situation of corruption and really of drugs in the Philippines?
You know, the drug situation wasn't that much worse than other countries in the region, but he used it as a campaign issue. But there was a lot of killings, there was a lot of crime, but those are symptoms of larger societal problems. You know, there's such extreme inequality, structural problems, and drugs are a very convenient scapegoat where you can take a cornucopia of social ills that are primarily, related to structural problems, and say, that's the problem there. You have a chemical substance in your community, and it's these deviants. If you just got rid of them, everything would be great again. In many ways, this reminds me not of genocide, but rather of a pogrom of the type that the Tsarist Russia used to have, where you have decades or years of dehumanization combined with scapegoating. Scapegoating literally comes from the Old Testament, right, where the villagers would confess their sins to a goat, a literal goat, and the priest would then drive the goat into the desert and thus cleansing the village of their sins. And this is what Duterte has been doing, saying that if we just got rid of these drug users, everything would be great again. But if you don't deal with these profound structural problems, none of them way. And you're always going to have people who are going to be self-medicating or doing what they can to survive. And some of these people are using the methamphetamines in order to work longer and harder because they have very taxing jobs and have to exert themselves quite a bit.
What are the main sort of drugs that are in use in the Philippines, and where do they come from? What's the source of the drug problem, even if it's not one that is as overblown as Duterte claims?
Yeah, the primary problem is methamphetamines. They call it shabu there. And it's trafficked from China. Some of it's made regionally, but it doesn't really matter where it comes from, right? In the United States, most of our methamphetamine comes from Mexico. It's a problem you can't deal with at the source, through source control. We tried that in the United States. We tried, restricting Sudafed tablets and that sort of thing, which clamped down on the small-scale artisanal production of methamphetamines in the U.S., but it was a gift, a tremendous gift to the Mexican cartels, because they weren't limited to these little Sudafed tablets. They were able to import industrial quantities of these chemicals and manufacture methamphetamine by the ton and ship it back to us. So it's not a problem you can deal with by chasing chemicals around.
So what has the impact been over this past year? I mentioned the number 7,000, and let's also talk about who's responsible. There's some are very clear it's the Philippines police acting at the behest of the president. Others say it's these vigilantes that are responsible for the killings.
Yeah, some of the a small fraction of the deaths are directly attributable to the police, where they say that people were resisting arrest and they were therefore killed in that process. In fact, that's not the case. Reuters did a terrific piece yesterday documenting how police very nonchalantly would bring dead corpses to the hospital and drop them off as though they were still alive, when in fact they had been executed on the spot. And then their bodies brought in, and then they say, we tried to save them. They struggled. Very often, guns are planted on these people to suggest that they were resisting arrest. President Duterte has even gone on camera and described when he was mayor of Davao City how he would plant guns on people after shootings. So this is not something he's embarrassed about. But the majority of the killings have been done by vigilantes. In all likelihood, the evidence is very strong, suggesting that this is being orchestrated by the police. And in fact, when there was an abduction earlier this year of a South Korean businessman who was then taken by the counter-narcotics police on a trumped-up warrant to their base, they strangled him. 2 weeks later, they demanded ransom from his family and got it before they were finally captured. And it was caused such an international outrage and domestic outrage that President Duterte ordered the police to stand down temporarily. And as they did, the number of extrajudicial killings also went down. So there's a bit of a correlation there. I don't think it's a mystery who's behind this.
And the numbers, 7,000, is that a lower end of the estimate, or could the numbers be larger?
Yeah, 7 to 9. I've seen as high as 9, but the national police chief, I think today said it was closer to 4. But you know, they're always downplaying these numbers. I would go with Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and those are the numbers they're using.
Now, in addition to planting guns on victims, bodies are often found displayed with signs saying, "I am a drug dealer. Don't be like me." What does that say to you? What is that also a signature of Duterte?
Well, that's the interesting thing. It could be anybody's signature, right? It's a common tactic to hang a cardboard sign around a corpse's neck saying, "I'm a drug pusher." Because a free-for-all, when President Duterte actually went on national television saying, "Do us a favor, if you know of any drug dealers, you know, kill them yourself. I will absolve you," right? So he's been on air many, many, many times, all recorded on video, where he's urging these kinds of things. And when the police are not seriously investigating these instances, it can be anybody's game. You could be settling scores with rival gangs and killing them and hanging a sign around their neck. It could be local squabbles. It could be someone you resented from high school that bullied you or whatever.
And all you have to do is claim that the person was a drug pusher or a user,
exactly.
And suddenly killing them was okay.
When you have a culture that allows extrajudicial killings, people will game the system, and they won't necessarily be killing for the reasons that you think they might be killing for.
Who is this war primarily aimed at, and how do you explain the large popularity ratings? Is it possible that this drug war is impacting disproportionately poor Filipinos, and wealthier, middle class and wealthier Filipinos are cheering it on and cheering on their new president?
Yes, that is exactly the case. It's kind of universal throughout the world. It's mostly the poor and the marginalized populations that are targeted in the war on drugs. But in the Philippines, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelmingly poor people living in slums who are being killed this way. And his popularity ratings are still very high in the country, but amongst the
poor,
they're
higher now than they were when he was first elected.
Yeah. Yeah, they go up and down, but he's losing a little bit of popularity, but especially amongst the poor. Who realize they're the ones being targeted by this.
Now, how has his drug war been met by other leaders? I mentioned Donald Trump. Let's talk about Trump first before we get into, say, how China has treated it. I think even Trump's allies were kind of shocked at the recent phone call that Trump exchanged in April with Duterte, and actually Duterte called Trump to congratulate him when he was inaugurated. I suppose one dictatorially inclined person likes another, but specifically when the transcripts of Trump's calls to Duterte were leaked, we found out he said to Duterte, Trump said, "I just wanted to congratulate you because I'm hearing of the unbelievable job on the drug problem. Many countries have the problem, we have a problem, but what a great job you're doing, and I just wanted to call you and tell you that." What do you say to that?
It's appalling. Not only that, Trump said, "You know, you're doing it the right way," he told Duterte.
Wow.
Which means either Trump is just criminally negligent and ignorant about what's going on in the Philippines, or he really does endorse this. But I think throughout all of this, as with so many other Trump foreign policy issues, where he has hotels, you know, tends to influence his concern about a country or his knowledge of a country. President Duterte was very crafty. When Trump got elected, Duterte appointed the developer in Manila who developed Trump Towers Manila and appointed him as his special representative to Washington. So there is an extreme conflict of interest here. This is a $140 million project, and Trump is very much involved in that. And so he tends to look the other way when he has hotels in countries, very often within the axis of autocrats, if you will. He doesn't want to make waves in those countries, it seems.
And it's, you know, foreign leaders know this about Trump. They use it as a way to manipulate Trump. They know he's easily manipulated, especially if his own business interests are at stake. We've seen this happening in the Gulf, for example. So there are other challenges facing Duterte right now. He's facing a war by militants that are claiming allegiance to ISIS in a different part of the country, outside the capital. There has been a flashpoint in Mindanao, a traditionally hot spot area, and some basically feel that Duterte's bigger challenge then the drug war, if that's even possible, lies with how he handles the Islamic or Islamist militants. What do you make of that?
Yes, and he largely took his eye off the ball and focused on the war on drugs when he should have been focusing on his southern flank, where ISIS and other militants. There have been lots of separatist groups and militant groups in throughout the Philippine history. So this is not entirely new, but this particular group. Yes, he basically took his eye off the ball. And earlier this year, or last year, when he was having his feud with Obama, you know, he wanted to kick the U.S. military advisors out of Mindanao, who were specifically there to help them fight the war on terror. His own military had to persuade him not to do that. So now I think he's glad he didn't totally eject them, because he needs a lot of help these days. But again, he's using a very big stick approach to so many problems, though. That are often quite complex.
What about neighboring nations? You mentioned China is one source of the methamphetamines that are used in the Philippines. And how does the Chinese leadership treat Duterte? This is not a country known for its respect for human rights.
Duterte is actually drifting closer and closer to China, much to the annoyance of a lot of people within the Philippines who say he's giving too many concessions to China with regard to the South China Sea Islands and dispute and that sort of thing.
And is that because foreign policy isn't Duterte's strong point?
Yeah, Duterte has a very confused foreign policy. It keeps careening from direction to direction based on his temper tantrums.
Wow, that sounds so familiar.
Yeah, exactly. And so it depends a lot on his mood and who he's mad at lately, you know?
Wow. So
it's hard to predict what this man's going to do.
What sort of accountability is there for somebody like him? I mean, in a country where you have thousands of extrajudicial killings happening over the course of just 1 year, where you can't trust the police if you're a poor person, what recourse is there? I mean, it sounds like the country has, to an extent, been turned into a Wild West. If a country like the U.S. isn't going to attempt to, say to the Philippines, you need to get your act together, or, you know, if you want to keep diplomatic ties, if you can't rely on the U.S. to do that, are there other countries, is the EU able to at least warn Duterte that he can't continue to run a country like this?
Yes, the EU is taking actually rather strong positions, which is being met with all kinds of obscenities from President Duterte.
He swears at them,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Some very, very language I could not use on your airwaves, I think.
Again, sounds very familiar. And of course, foreign diplomatic pressure can often be abused and misused. So the even more important question then to ask is, are grassroots groups within the Philippines able to do something about justice in their country? Is there enough of an opposition? Is there opposition building? Are there protests that those of us outside the U.S. could support or show solidarity with?
There are a number of good groups within the Philippines who are increasingly mobilizing against the drug war, but they're under tremendous pressure. This is a very terrifying situation to be in. And as an outsider, I have to be very cognizant about talking about them because of their own security situation. Duterte is infamous for his cyber army of trolls who will tweet all kinds of nasty things at people. But sometimes if you're in country, that could translate into, you know, more graphic things, more physical threats. So it's a very delicate situation for them, particularly when Duterte still enjoys rather high popularity ratings. More popular for other things than the war on drugs, I might add. He's got a very complex agenda, some of which is actually somewhat progressive. I shudder to use that word in this context. But with regard to the extractive industries, mining companies, for instance, some of the issues regarding the poor and development, he's actually been not bad. There are leftists in his coalition cabinet. Many of them are starting to get very, very worried about the direction things are going in. And others not in his cabinet are calling for a complete break with Duterte. So the opposition domestically is growing, but they need a lot of, you know, help there. It's a tough fight for them.
Do you feel finally, Sanjo, that there is this very dangerous desire in societies that sometimes rises to the surface when they feel their society is out of control, where they will put this trust in a strong man and look the other way repeatedly as crimes are committed because they feel safer? I mean, and this is how we see murderous dictators rise. I mean, it's so hard to make sense of it. You see even diaspora Filipinos defending Duterte, and it just doesn't seem to make sense on the surface. Just as it doesn't seem to make sense why some poor white Americans would support Donald Trump, you know, a person who lives in a gold-plated apartment and pursues policies that don't really help them. You know, how do you view this?
Not to make light of the situation, but I think many of life's lessons can be learned from The Simpsons, right? So there is this one episode in The Simpsons where young Bart Simpson runs for class president. And he begins his campaign by attacking his opponent. And he says, "My opponent says there are no easy answers. Well, I say he's not looking hard enough." That, in many ways, explains the rise of the axis of autocrats. It explains the popularity of Fox News. And it explains why our Congress is totally quagmired, that people believe that easy answers, politicians believe that easy answers are what people want and it will sell. But the war on drugs, as with so many persistent problems, have solutions that are counterintuitive. They are not obvious as the knee-jerk solutions would be. That if you, if drugs can be dangerous, why not have a war on drugs? You're not in favor of drugs, are you? But that's a false dichotomy. There's a whole spectrum of possibilities in between totalitarian fascism and zero tolerance and war on drugs and a death penalty on one hand and anarchism on the other end. There's a whole spectrum of possibilities that we're not talking about. And so they're giving the electorate a simple yes or no, black or white, simple dichotomy, which does not fit the reality of a very complex world.
If Duterte had your ear, how would you tell him to tackle the drug problem?
I would say look at the root causes behind so many of these problems, which I think I call it the PDA problem, poverty, despair, and alienation. Poverty is easy. Everyone can point to it and see it. But despair and alienation cut across class lines and are very profound. But if people don't believe that tomorrow is going to be a better day, if that their best days are behind them, many people will turn to self-medication or lash out. Sometimes it'll materialize in terms of insurgencies or antisocial behavior. Some will turn inwards and self-medicate. But we need to deal with why people are choosing to use these drugs rather than trying to punish our way out of this problem. Because you can't possibly repress your way out of these profound structural problems.
Right. I imagine if poor drug users were treated in the same way that wealthy drug users were, drug rehab programs, treatment for mental illness or depression. Somehow we tend to approach drug problems differently depending upon who's the one suffering from drug addiction, right?
Exactly. The best solution I can think of is give people a reason to look forward to tomorrow. And too many people in this world don't have that reason.
Sanjo Tree, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
My guest has been Sanjo Tree. He's a fellow of the Drug Policy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo. Thank you.